after certain stuff, it just takes you certain places, does it not?
You can't hear that without thinking about NOLA. And in this hour, speaking of NOLA, I am pleased to welcome a son of that city, the brilliant thespian, Wendell Pierce, joins us right now for the rest of this hour to talk about NOLA, the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival, which kicks off this week, and his new series, Ellsworth. I was saying earlier in this program today that this brother is everywhere. Wendell Pierce stays busy, and I'm always just thrilled that he can find an hour to talk to me because he's filming all the time. He is he's obviously doing everything he can to aid and abet the rebirth of his city. He is running my favorite talk station in New Orleans every day. Brilliant and busy brother, but always takes my phone call and comes on this program, and I invite him. Wendell Pierce, I love you. There ain't nothing you can do about it, black man.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. I cannot tell you how honored I am to be on KBLA. This is my favorite radio station in Los Angeles, if not the country. Even, you know, a close second to my own. but we try to emulate this station because this is the premier talk radio station in the country. I feel that you are doing great work and important work and giving people the platform. And that is the most important thing that anybody can do. So thank you for having me on.
No, you are kind, my man. You are kind, and I celebrate you and all the work that you're doing, which we'll talk about in this hour. But since you went there, let me just follow you. Well, actually, I went there. You followed me, so let me follow you again. tell me why it mattered to you to get involved in the radio business. Tell me more about how well the station is doing. But what I'm really pressing toward is, and I've said, I've called you this before many times, I call a few of my friends who I believe fit this bill, the following. I see you, and it's the highest compliment I can give you, I see you as a citizen artist. You are a citizen artist, and your artistic mm-hmm. genius, your particular brand of artistic genius is not at all separated from your advocacy, from your activism, but it means something to put your money where your mouth is, and to do what you're doing with this wonderful station in New Orleans. Tell me why that matters to you.
Well, I mean, I think in America, we've forgotten the role of the artist. Mm-hmm. You have explained, you have qualified it in a wonderful way with the moniker of citizen artist. But that is the definition of what an artist should be. I am not an entertainer. Mm. Entertainment is a byproduct of what I do when I produce my art. But I'm not an entertainer. The role of art and the role of an artist is that which individual thoughts are to a person, where you reflect on who you are, where you've been, your strengths, your weaknesses, what you have to achieve, where you have failed, where you have triumphed, where you have been, where you are now, and where you hope to go. When you reflect on that as you toss and turn at night in your bed, or as you reflect on your condition, that is the role of the artist in the community as a whole. When we come together collectively and say, where have we been? Where do we hope to go? What are our values? And collectively come to some idea and conclusion and focus and vision about our values. Because culture is that intersection of life and how a people deal with its journey. It is the literal intersection. That's what culture is. And that is the place in which an artist collectively with the community serves that role that the individual thoughts are to a person as they reflect on where they're going to be. We collectively converse and decide what our values are and then go out and act on them. That is the role of an artist. Even when folks you don't agree with, trying to find consensus and common ground, and what is the common good for our humanity. That's the most important thing. And in all of our greatest times, there has been art that has led the way, that has helped. On those marches, we shall overcome. We shall, to steady us as evil people plot, good people have to plan. And together, song and poetry and theater and film makes us collectively think about what we're going to do and then act on those values. And for me, WBOK, 1230 AM, what New Orleans is talking about, was a 70-year-old station that gave a voice to the voiceless in the Black community. Imagine in the depth of the hellacious Jim Crow South of New Orleans, where Black folks couldn't even go to a park, a green space, except one day a week, Negro Day on Wednesdays. They had a station that gave them a voice that they can call and give voice to what their needs are and complaint, and which is actually in the Constitution, to have their complaints addressed by the government that they are supposed to have control over. And that's what WBOK was. And it was on the selling block. And together with a few of my partners, we said we couldn't let that that important station go away. And that's why we bought the station. Unfortunately, it was January of 2020.
Yeah. So,
the worst time to buy a radio station is in the middle of a pandemic.
Yeah.
But we are keeping our head above water.
There you go. Wendell is brilliant at what he does, and some have even called me brilliant at what I do from time to time. But what we have in common is that neither one of us realize that we we're climbing up the rough side of the mountain, trying to bring radio stations, Black talk stations online, in and post a pandemic. He launched his, and he took over in 2020. We took over here in LA in 2021, and thank God for Jesus, we're both still standing. More with Wendell Pierce, really just getting started with Wendell Pierce when we come forward on Tavis Smiley.
You're listening to Tavis Smiley.
Tavis Smiley.
Ranked number 45 on the Heavy 100 list of the 100 most important radio talk show hosts in America.
Sounds different. Huh. This is Tavis Smiley.
Tavis Smiley in conversation with the owner of WBOK, 1230 AM in New Orleans, Wendell Pierce. I am honored to be heard on that station right now. And so I thank Wendell and his team for allowing this program to be syndicated on that station. And for those who may have just started listening to us in other cities across the country, we're in New York and D.C. and Philly and Chicago and everywhere. And we're literally next week, I believe, about to make an announcement, a big announcement. We have a huge cache of stations that are picking up this program in the next week, and a long list. Okay, I'll tell you. We're announcing next week literally a dozen new stations that have picked up this program. Tavis Smiley in syndication. 12 new stations have picked us up, and you heard it here first. You hear the details about that next week, so the cat's out the bag. But I say all that, and I hadn't planned to say that, but I say that because when I went into syndication, the very first station to carry me in syndication was WBOK 1230 AM. So you know I love you, Wendell Pierce.
No, but thank you. I love you right back, Tavis.
No, so we're delighted to be on his station, and I thank Wendell again for giving us some time in this hour. Before I move on to your artistic work, and not that BOK isn't artistic and part of your expression, but just a quick question. I say this all the time to this audience, particularly in this election year, and not just election year, in this season of America, and we are in the midst of a multi-million-dollar climate justice campaign here in LA on our station, and just all the stuff that's happening in the world. I find myself reminding this audience of the value and the import of Black media, primarily because there are certain questions that don't get asked if we don't ask them, certain issues that don't get raised if we don't raise them, certain people doing some amazing work who don't get profiled if we don't profile them. That's my own assessment, but I want to get your take in this critical moment, even beyond the projects that you have in New Orleans and I have here in LA, just about the value and the import of Black media at a critical moment like this in America's history.
Black media is so important. There was a wonderful documentary a couple of years ago by the great Stanley Nelson called Soldiers Without Swords. Mm-hmm. And it talked about the great Black newspapers like the Pittsburgh Courier and the Chicago Defender and the work of Ida B. Wells, that it was so impactful for the Black communities in the early part of the 20th century during Jim Crow, that those media outlets were seen as a threat to white supremacy in the South, that they were contributing to Blacks you know, the black migration moving north looking and seeking a better life, that they were banned and prohibited. And everything was done possible that the Pittsburgh Courier and the Chicago Defender weren't distributed. And Ida B. Wells, who reported on the lynching that was happening, her life was threatened and was constantly threatened. Her life was always at threat. And but yet still, those are the papers. I remember my mother would tell me, she used to sit at her mother's feet, my grandmother's feet, and they on Saturdays would read the Chicago Defender and the Pittsburgh Courier as if they were, that was their weekly readings from their mother. So my grandmother was giving them the impetus and understanding that black people can thrive, that black people have the right to exercise their own right of self-determination against all odds. And we created a mantra in my family that can't die 3 days before the creation of the world. So don't tell me you can't do something. So in the midst of this violent, violent culture and of America, where everything threatened the livelihood and the lives of black folks, it was the black media that gave hope, that gave vision, that gave purpose, that gave a plan of action and strategy that contributed to the great black migration to the north, northeast, and to the west there in Los Angeles, and gave people guidelines and places to go and acted as a manuscript in which you can thrive. And if you made it to Chicago or Cleveland or New York, you can communicate with your family back home through the black media. So the black media has always been important. I bought WBOK because, can you imagine the announcements on black radio when they're saying there's a fish fry on Friday and Dr. Martin Luther King is going to be here on Sunday? And we had to advocate, you know, because even then, now everybody marched with King. But even back then, if we're going to be honest, you know, nobody. People were like, oh, no, not the troublemaker. What are we going to do? How are we going to thrive? It was the black media that gave us the platform to know what was truthful, because we were lied to long before this fake news phenomenon of today. We were constantly stereotyped and given misinformation. It was a constant thing. And so it was the black media. And to this day, it is the black media. And especially in this election year, I think about my state of Louisiana and the platform that we have to make sure that people are reminded of the Colfax massacre. When in the late 1870s, they didn't like the result of the election. And so they killed 300 black folks who were at the courthouse exercising their right to vote. It happened in Opelousas, Louisiana. There was a mass murder of black Republicans in New Orleans, with a monument to the men that executed those who were just trying to be politically active, and they didn't like the idea of Reconstruction, black men in police uniforms, so they killed the police. Right? They attacked the police. Sounds familiar? January 6th, you know? It's the same. It's been happening. It's a continuum. And and it's the black media that must always shine a light on those things and know that they don't go away, that we have to be ever vigilant. And there is blood on that ballot box. And we have to remind people, in honor of those who gave the ultimate sacrifice so that we could have our rights today, that we owe it to them to shine light on any injustices and exercise our right of self-determination.
I will tell you that over the course of my almost 30 years of knowing him, I've had a lot of fun times with Wendell Pierce. I was in New York some months ago, and he and I hung out and had a good time then. I've had a lot of fun times with Wendell. But I will also hasten to tell you, I have never, the fun and the silliness notwithstanding, I have never had a conversation with Wendell Pierce, including this one, that I did not find empowering, sobering, and inspiring, as I'm sure you are feeling all those sentiments right now. It's why I love talking to Wendell Pierce. As he was talking, two things came to mind. He mentioned Dr. King and everybody these days lying and saying they marched with Dr. King. Coretta Scott King, as you may know, Wendell, was, let me rephrase that, I had the honor of being a friend of Mrs. King, Coretta Scott King. Spent a lot of time together over the years, sat for a lot of conversations, one in which she busted my chops. That's been seen millions of times on YouTube when Coretta Scott King went in on me and told a joke that just leveled the house about me. So her sense of humor came out in that particular conversation. We were sitting for a conversation in Ebenezer, in the pulpit, where her husband had preached all those sermons for a live conversation. And it was a funny moment. You can find it on Google. I won't get into it right now. But I had the honor of being her friend. And she said to me on a number of occasions, Wendell, to your point, Tavish, these Negroes is lying. They lying. Everybody wants to say that they marched with Dr. King. No, what these Negroes mean was they were sitting on the porch when Dr. King and I walked past their house, but they did not march with Martin and me. They saw us marching by their house. I thought about that story when you were talking about Dr. King. The second thing, and you know this story, but I want to just put a finer point on why I love New Orleans. There's so many reasons I love Wendell's hometown. But Dr. King only founded one organization in his life. It was and is, remains, the SCLC, the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. It was founded in the basement of a church in New Orleans.
New Orleans.
That's it. That's where SCLC came to be. And so we celebrate the city of New Orleans for all kinds of reasons. Just want to add that to all that Wendell has said just a moment ago. So as you see, I could talk to Wendell just about serious stuff all day long because he's a brilliant brother. But he's also an amazing thespian. And as I said earlier, he's busy as ever. He has a new series called Elsbeth. And I want to play a clip from Elsbeth before we continue our conversation.
I didn't want her there. City Hall wants her there. It's the lawsuit from last year, all those wrongful arrests by Major Case Unit.
Yeah, that wasn't our fault, Captain.
Doesn't matter.
The judge ordered us to hire an outside attorney for police oversight to observe your investigations for a year.
I know,
but what am I supposed to do with this lady?
Let her observe. Her DOJ boss in Chicago thinks she's easily amused.
Yeah,
well, she's easily amusing herself all over my crime scene.
Bob, it's a suicide. Just humor her.
Tell her some old war stories. She'll get bored and move on.
Wendell Pierce, first of all, as I've said to Wendell 1,000 times, I just love his voice. I mean, I could talk to Wendell all day long because those pipes just do something. I love his voice. But that said,
I tried to emulate my hero. The reason I'm an actor is James Earl Jones.
Oh yeah.
So
yeah, you ain't doing bad imitating him. If that's what you want to call it, if you want to call it imitation, I think James Earl Jones got it honestly, and I think you got it honestly. I mean, before I go to Ellsworth, let me just do this right quick, because I scribbled this down. I know the audience heard it, and I'm moving so fast. I scribbled this down. I want to go back to this since you mentioned your fashioning your thespian work, that voice off of James Earl Jones. Let me go back to what you said a moment ago. You ran past it so fast, but you said you dropping bars, man. I want to go pick this up. Give me again that Pierce family mantra about Kate dying. What's that line again? Slow that thing down and give it to me again.
Can't die 3 days before the creation of the world. Lord, don't ever tell me you can't do something.
Can't died 3 days before the foundation of the world. So don't you ever tell me.
The creation of the world.
The creation of the world. Yeah. So don't ever tell me you can't do something.
Can't die 3 days before the creation of the world. Don't ever tell me you can't do something.
Oh, that'll preach. That'll preach, as we say.
Oh, yes. That was the family motto going all the way back to my grandfather, man. Herbert Edwards.
Yeah.
I am in the midst of doing research on. Do your family research, man. Do your family research. I had a great uncle who was lynched. They attempted to lynch him. And my grandfather, his brother, along with other brothers, saved him. And in the midst of that, they went back and sued the folks who lynched him civilly and won and got the money to buy the acreage that is now our homestead of sugarcane, about 45 acres in Assumption Parish, Louisiana.
You better stop.
I don't know how true the story is, and I'm doing the research now, but just the idea that, first of all, we do own the land,
mm-hmm.
if it is a story, what a wonderful made-up fiction story. But also, it is a reflection of that mantra. My grandfather always said it. Well, you said, do this. Oh, no, I can't do that, boy. Can't die 3 days before the creation of the world. Don't ever tell me you can't do something. Mm.
That's rich. That's rich. This audience hears me say it all the time. Every day I walk out of here, I'm smarter than when I came in. But every day I'm looking for something to hold on to. And I got my something now. That's that thing that I will hold on to the rest of this day and for the next few days, be marinating on that. And before you know it, I can't steal this one because it's been said on public radio now or publicly on radio. it's the Pierce family mantra. So I can't steal his family motto, his family mantra. But I may incorporate that into my stuff, Wendell, if you don't mind. I may incorporate that with me.
Feel free. Feel free.
That's good stuff. I'm looking at my clock now. It wouldn't be fair to give you 90 seconds to tell me about Ellsworth. But you can start telling me about Ellsworth. We'll continue when we come forward.
I'll be brief. Ladies and gentlemen, you see why we're friends. Because one conversation can last a couple of days with me and Travis.
That is true.
We both have the gift. Yeah, but Elsbeth is a wonderful show on CBS. It is a reflection of what CBS really does well when it comes to procedural shows. And it's based on this character that was on The Good Fight and The Good Wife. Elsbeth, played by Carrie Preston. And Carrie created this as a character that was just a guest on those shows. But now she has her own show. And it is like Columbo. It is one of those old throwback crime mystery series where you see a crime happen at the top of the hour. Mm. And it's less of who done it, but how done it, because you actually see the crime. And then you're going to see how Elsbeth figures it out. She's quirky. She's funny. She's unusual. And it's akin to Columbo. She's like the female Columbo. But she's a thorn in my side. I'm a police commander, the captain of the precinct, and she is there sent on a consent decree to make sure that we do our jobs correct. And there's something suspicious about my character, Captain Wagner, that she is also investigating, that we find out whether or not it's true. Mm-hmm. So it's a really lovely anthology series that I'm enjoying doing, new on CBS, Thursday nights at 10 o'clock.
There you have it. He knows how to do it. That's why he owns a radio station. He actually does a show on his own station every now and then, I think. But he knows how to do it and how to hit his mark. He did that thing in short order and got out right on time. More with Wendell Pierce when we come forward on Tavis Smiley.
Seeking the truth. Speaking the truth. This is the Tavis Smiley Show. Ready to re-examine your assumptions and expand your inventory of ideas? More of Tavis Smiley coming your way right now.
More of Tavis Smiley and Wendell Pierce coming your way right about now. If you missed the first half hour of this conversation, you missed a good one. I encourage you beyond this conversation to go get the podcast on any of our platforms if you missed any part of this conversation. Because Wendell appears to have been dropping bars in this dialogue today, as he always does. I want to play something from Power in just a second, and let me just tee this up, because I got one more question about Elsbeth first. But I will admit on national radio that I was slow on the Power thing. Sorry, 50. I was slow on the Power thing. But when I heard that my friend Wendell Pierce was joining the cast, he and Erica, I had to check this out. And when I tell you, I got hooked on the Power thing. I got hooked on Power. And then I'm going back years trying to catch up on everything. But it was Wendell Pierce and knowing he was going to be there that pulled me in. And when I tell you this Negro kills it, I tell you he kills it, he and Erica snaps on Power. We'll talk about that in a second. Before I get to that, it's been hard to find a clip that I can play on radio. This is family radio, but we'll do our best, Miles and I will. That said, before I get to Power, tell me more about your character on Elsbeth, now on CBS, Wendell Pierce.
Yes, I play a captain in the NYPD. Over my precinct, and I'm a commander, Captain C.W. Wagner. Mm. And he is very politic. He's moving up the ranks. I dare say I want to be a commissioner one day. Mm-hmm. And there's something suspect about him that Elsbeth is investigating. And it's over the course of the season, we're halfway through right now, that you ultimately going to find out she's investigating him. And I've just found out that she's been investigating me. So I feel as though I've been betrayed. Mm. And that under the guise of being there for a consent decree, which is, you know, the DLJ coming in and overlooking the New York Police Department to make sure that they are operating properly and within the Constitution. She has also been really sent there to investigate me, unbeknownst to me, and I find out. And so the stuff is about to hit the fan when it comes to that. Okay. But I love the fact that Gloria Rubin plays my wife.
Yes.
We have our own foundation. We are doing things in the community and trying to improve people's lives. And I love portraying a black officer. Once again, I play a lot of police officers. I was on a show and they told me I played 18 police officers in my career. And I didn't realize it. I couldn't remember the names of any of them. But the thing that I learned in doing research, especially for these roles, you know, black folks become police officers because the crime that disproportionately affects our communities does not reflect the good people of our communities. 99.99% of our communities are folks just trying to go to work and live a better life. And they're law-abiding, hardworking people. And it's 1% of the community that is having an adverse effect on all of the community. And that was the thing that really inspires people that through all of my interviews to become police officers. And so I tried to reflect that in Captain Wagner as well.
You ain't playing no cop on Power.
Oh, no. Well, that's the thing that I love. You know, that's the thing I love. I love to tell people, and I really appreciate the fact that I'm able to do the two at the same time. I'm playing cops and robbers.
Yeah.
Because on this, I am Snaps and Ishmael is my name.
Yeah.
And on there with Erica Woods, who is playing Pops, who is my betrothed. And hopefully, I wish they get into it a little more where our names come from. She's actually Pop, and I'm Snaps. And of course, that means Snaps, Crackle, and Pop. So there was a Crackle. And I hope somewhere down the line they introduce the fact that there was a Crackle. Loosely based on a real robbery, bank robbery outfit. We used to rob banks. But now on Power, Power Book 3, Raising Kanan, we are some OG gangsters who are financing and bankrolling some kids with slinging stuff on the street. And we don't take no mess.
No, you don't.
Don't mess with my money, Tavis. Don't you mess with my money. We also like to celebrate the unique black love that you see out there. You ever see those couples that dress alike? They talk alike. They go to the same things. I've been pitching. I want to do a step scene where you see Snaps and Pop stepping or doing their version of stepping.
Oh yeah,
dancing to some music or something. We are that old couple that you go, oh, ain't they sweet? But we're lecherous. And we're some lecherous folks. And I myself, I have to admit here on public radio, out here for the world, that I was late to the game myself until they asked me to consider coming on the show. And then I checked it out and I was like, oh man, I like this. And I think I could do something with the role. So he is one of those, when you walk into that ballroom on the corner, as we call it in New Orleans, a ballroom, and that guy sitting in the back in the red in the red vinyl booth, smoking and talking trash, and it seems like he's not doing anything, but he's controlling everybody, right? That's Snaps, and that's who I play. And I love the fact that people get to see, at the same time, my range as an actor.
Oh, they see it,
I'm
man.
Literally playing cops and robbers.
He is indeed. So here now, I will warn you, it's hard to find a clip on this particular show that is approved by the FCC. for Family Radio. Miles would do his best to bleep out the stuff for radio. If you're listening on the app or any other device, you'll hear it because the FCC don't care about that. For some reason, they just care about radio, terrestrial radio. So if you're listening on radio, we'll bleep it out as best we can. If you are listening elsewhere, you'll hear the full thing. So feel yourself forewarned. But here's a scene from Power Book 3, Raising Canaan.
I have always found unique to be reasonable and thoughtful. And if he is saying to sit tight while he's figuring out some things, I would suggest that you give him time to fashion a plan.
Neek's plan's being made by his competition.
Who's your brother fine-ass smashing?
Rock.
this business makes for strange bedfellows, right, baby?
Just a little taste. That's about all I can give you. Just a little taste. But yeah. Wendell, you and Erica, y'all killed this thing, man. I mean, y'all killing it.
Man, we are enjoying it so much. It is. I've always wanted to get an opportunity to play a role like this, and I just, like I said, and to do it with Erica, which I met. I met her on another show. We did the Michael J. Fox show. It's mm-hmm. been years since then mm-hmm. to be able to work together again. And she's a great actor. And to create, I hope, this iconic duo, mm-hmm. you know, Snaps and Pop, you know. We were just supposed to do just a couple of episodes. They asked me, you know, if I could come on. Mm-hmm. And because it shoots in New York and it's, you know, it works out, I'm able to do both shows.
Yeah.
And so it's really great. And we have done over half of the shows now. And it's a guilty pleasure.
No,
to be able to do both shows. So I'm blessed.
You're killing it. You're killing it. He's a busy man, as I said earlier. And that doesn't include Broadway. When I last saw Wendell in person, we were toasting his Tony nomination. We'll talk about his Broadway work. Busy, busy guy. Wendell Pierce on Tavis Smiley.
Hope, agency, dignity. This is Tavis Smiley.
Can you dig it?
Come on!
Who do you trust to get at the truth?
Tavis Smiley. Smiley.
That's who. The conversation continues right now.
It does indeed with the brilliant thespian Wendell Pierce, who is our guest in this hour. So I was saying a moment ago, Wendell, when I last saw you in person, we were in New York. We were toasting you for your nomination, your Tony nomination, for your brilliant role, your brilliant term as Mr. Loman, of course, in the Broadway revival of Arthur Miller's Death of a Salesman. I read somewhere recently, yeah, preparing for this conversation, that you called playing that role the high water mark of your career. Was that an accurate quote?
That is an accurate quote. Yeah. Quote that, and it's very truthful. I would have marked not only in my career, I think one of the high water marks of my life, because I've never done a role that has challenged me so comprehensively, so completely. Not only this, you know, the skills of the vocal and the physical skills of being able to do the role night after night, 8 times a week, but the psychological deep dive that one has to do when playing that role to really tap into the power and its effectiveness. It is a real reflection on yourself, sometimes your inadequacies, your self-worth, your value, what your vision of the purpose of your life is, and how you have failed yourself, really looking at your failures. I started doing the role when Tabitha, I had concerns about whether my best days were behind me, whether or not, you know, the concerns of a middle-aged man coming to a place where maybe I haven't done all the things that I wanted to do with my life, you know, building relationships and family and friends and all, caring for my parents at the end of their lives. My mother had gone. My father got to see me opening night. And I've had one of the most cathartic, most beautiful moments of my life to honor him from center stage on Broadway on opening night. He came to New York in 1947 when the play was first done. And to know that he lived long enough, I just recently lost him in November, but he lived 98 years so that he was able to see his son play that American iconic role, center stage on Broadway. And I honored him on opening night. That is beyond any sort of artistic achievement. That is a moment of pure spiritual manifestation of the dreams of those who had gone before in my family, the dreams of my father and everything that he had worked for to give me everything I needed to be there. And to do that in a role that is a part of the American canon, that is our American Hamlet, was a great epiphany and a great blessing. So that will be the high water mark of my career, if not my life.
Blessing is the word I was going to. You have been blessed beyond measure, your mother, your father, your family, and you have blessed us and continue to do so with your brilliance on stage, on the screen. We all love Wendell Pierce. Our remaining moments with him when we come forward on Tavis Smiley.
What's your quarrel with the world? You're listening to Tavis Smiley. Smiley. Smart talk for curious people just like you. You're listening to Tavis Smiley.
I've got 3 minutes left, Wendell Pierce, and I'll give it all to you. Here is my exit question. First of all, condolences, of course, on the loss again of your father. I'm so glad you had that moment at Death of a Salesman, and to know that you received a Tony nomination for it makes the story even sweeter. I close with this. Since you went there, talking about how you had to ultimately push through the doubts that you were having as a black man of a certain age. There are other black men of that same age listening right now, what I'm listening in this studio with headphones on. So I'm curious as to your answer to this question, because I think it would be instructive and informative and inspiring for all of us. At this stage in your life, when you were doubting yourself with all that you have accomplished, no less, how did you push through? How did you navigate through that moment? Because you're doing some amazing work now, brother.
Yeah, well, what I realized was that's a great challenge and fear to have, and that don't try to avoid it, but lead into the fear and the unknown. Because what I learned was courage, true courage, is not acting in the absence of fear, but in the face of it. True courage is not acting in the absence of it, but in the face of it. Mm-hmm. So while I still have fear, I now have courage. Mm. And it goes full circle back to what we spoke of earlier. Can't die 3 days before the creation of the world. Don't tell me you can't do something. So even in this third act of my life, I am empowered. I actually am empowered with the knowledge that I have from the beginnings of my life, from all that I have gone through, all of those things that may have beaten me down to the point where I had doubted myself. I realized, thank you, okay, now I know. You beat me to a point of epiphany, of understanding, of reawakening, because now, although I may have fear, although I may have my doubts, I now have courage, and I can act in the face of them, and I still know that I can exercise my right of self-determination. Even till the last moment of my death, I will be empowered. And I learned that from all of those who came before, all those old Africans captured, sitting alone at night saying, I wonder if one day I'll ever be able to make a way. And we have made it a part of our culture to make a way out of no way. So exercise your right of self-determination. Make an impact on the world. That is your birthright. And especially in this year, remember there's blood on that ballot box. and honor those who shed that blood to make sure that you can cast that vote and get out there and change your world.
Mic drop. I'm out. See you tomorrow. Keep the faith.
Blessings.
Love you, Wendell.